Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On the politics of this, I've always regarded health care, with all due respect to Mayor Bloomberg, as a 32-ounce Red Bull. It has been an energy drink for both parties. Whatever the court decides, it's two more sips out of the 32-ounce Red Bull. It's an energy drink that energizes all political actors on health care.
That was National Journal correspondent Major Garrett on ABC This Week yesterday, as we await the announcement from on high about when the Supreme Court will rule on the health reform law. It could be in the next minute. It could be tomorrow or Thursday, or maybe never. How about never? They never tell the American people when on these things. They are also being mysterious, psychiatrists would call it withholding, about announcing the Arizona immigration law ruling. This is also much anticipated and with vast ramifications for how states may crack down on people here illegally. This is in part about whether police can just decide that someone seems like they might be here illegally to them and use that as a reason to ask for documents. Also, whether being here illegally, which is against federal law, can be a basis of prosecution by the states. We do have one decision. It's a really kind of it's a decision by not accepting a case. And with us to talk about that and much more now are John Heilman, National Affairs Editor for New York Magazine, and author of Game Change, Obama and the Clintons, McCain and Palin, and the Race of a Lifetime. And the Takeaways Washington correspondent, Todd Zwillick, who is at the Supreme Court. Hello, John. Hello, Todd. Can you hear me?
Hi, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
And Todd, have you seen this decision that just came down on the Montana Supreme Court order on campaign finance having to do with Citizens United?
Brian, I'm holding it in my hand. I just came from the room where they hand out orders. They did not hand out any paper on the Affordable Care Act or on SB 1070 in Arizona. You asked me about American Tradition Partnership, Attorney General of Montana. It says, petition for certiorari is granted. They're going to rehear the case. The judgment of the Supreme Court of Montana is reversed. It is so ordered. So take that Supreme Court speak for the fact that they're going to rehear that case and they're overturning the judgment of the courts in Montana.
All right. So we will see what does that mean for Citizens United?
Well, that's a great question. If I were I'm leafing through the papers right now, Brian, to tell you accurately, and I don't want to say too much so that I don't lead you astray.
Right. All right, well, take a look, because we are getting conflicting versions of this. The AP says the Supreme Court strikes down Montana's limits on corporate campaign spending, in other words, upholding Citizens United with a 5-4 split. They haven't actually heard this case. This is about whether they will take on the case. John Heilman, you're familiar with this, right?
Mildly.
So we will wait and see how that straightens itself out over the next few minutes. But, Todd, were you telling us that there will be no ruling today on either health care or Arizona immigration?
I am telling you that I was just in the room where the bell goes off and they hand out orders and opinions on paper, and the paper that was put in my hand contains no ruling on the Affordable Care Act or on Arizona SB 1070. It does include, you know, the grant of cert on Montana that you just mentioned, but nothing on the other. So I guess we're waiting until Thursday, the last day of opinions from the court.
And are you sure that they're finished handing out papers for the morning?
They were finished. There was one stack. There was one stack with staple papers. They gave it to us and said, that's it. So I ran out to make sure I could talk to you.
Okay.
If I missed something, it's certainly possible, but then I would have left the room a little early.
John, we are getting other reports that say they may still hand out a few more of these papers in the next few minutes. So as far as I'm concerned, we're still waiting to see whether health care or Arizona is going to come down today. John, what did you want to say?
I was just going to say, I'm looking at the court has posted on its website the order list for what they're doing today, and it looks to me like I can confirm the fact that there's not going to be anything on either one of the big cases today.
There we go.
But again, according to what they posted now on their website just in the last 30 seconds, Neither the healthcare case or the immigration case is coming down today. But I suppose it's theoretically possible that they'll do something out of the ordinary. But usually when they post these and hand out paper, as we were just discussing, the that's it for the day. So I think we're probably not going to get either one of these decisions this today.
So, listeners, there you have an idea in real time, live on the air, of the chaos that ensues when the Supreme Court starts its session, especially on these Mondays and Thursdays in June when people are awaiting earth-shattering decisions. John Heilman, why do they work this way? I mean, in any other self-respecting branch of government, if they have a huge announcement to make and they know when they're going to make it, they tell us this will be announced Monday morning at 10 a.m. The Supreme Court knows when at a certain point, but won't tell the public. They won't give the press even 10 minutes notice. It will be today. It won't be today. What's that actually about?
You know, Brian, it's one of the things that's baffled me for a long time, and it probably would be too glib to say that the court this kind of behavior is consistent with the fact that the court, for instance, is the only branch of government, the only element of the federal government, at least, that doesn't allow cameras to record its proceedings, and that there's some, you know, as I say, I'm going to announce in advance, it's probably too glib to say that they're interested in maintaining a certain degree of mystery around the court and that they do things that would otherwise be considered strange in other branches of government. I mean, closed proceedings is the most important court in the land. A lot of people have made arguments about cameras, that cameras should be in that courtroom to be able to capture oral arguments for history and for the public, and yet the court has various arguments for why that's a bad idea. There is, I think, some predilection and towards what has always been, I don't want to say precedent exactly, but what the court has traditions, and those traditions it hews to, regardless of the rational arguments that would seem to make some of those traditions seem outmoded, outdated, and silly.
Now, here is an opinion that did just come down from the Supreme Court on a different case. The AP reporting that the Supreme Court has ruled out life in prison without the possibility of parole for juveniles under 18. And this was another much-anticipated decision. Is it cruel and unusual punishment under the Constitution to have life in prison without the possibility of parole for juveniles under 18? That would have been juveniles who have committed murders. And the AP is telling us that the Supreme Court has ruled out life in prison without the possibility of parole for juveniles under 18. So there you have a criminal justice ruling. John, on the politics, there was news last week of Speaker Boehner advising Republicans not to spike the football, I think the phrase was, if the Obama law is struck down. If it is struck down, why not, politically speaking? If the individual mandate is so unpopular, why wouldn't they break into a chorus of ding dong, the wicked witch is dead?
Well, first of all, I think that a lot of Republicans will, in fact, do that. But I think what Speaker Boehner is trying to do is get in front of the argument that Democrats will make, which is that if the law is struck down, that it was the work of a partisan court, not acting in accordance with precedent and with the law, but behaving in a partisan way. That is what a lot of Democrats are going to say if the court strikes down the law. And I think Speaker Boehner wants to not have Republicans cheerleading the court for fear that would increase the vulnerability to that argument, if you see what I mean. You know, if Republicans are all standing up cheering the court, it makes them a riper target for Democrats who want to say that effectively the court is now acting as a judicial arm of the Republican Party.
Todd Zwillick, what's the scene like outside the courtroom? Are there members of interest groups standing around waiting to react and maybe even to protest, depending on which way it might go on health care or Arizona? What's happening around you right now?
I would estimate, I'm going to go out on a limb and estimate about 250 to 300 people on the front steps of the court here, Brian, many of which are my colleagues in the media who I recognize. But there are protesters, there are anti-Planned Parenthood abortion protesters. Some of the signs are about health care. There are some folks here with a large "Don't Tread on Me" flag, which has become a symbol of the Tea Party, and a lot of cameras on a lot of tripods and light umbrellas and photographers. I've been shooed away from a couple of vantage points by news photographers already as I've been talking to you. So there is a scene like that. Brian, I also want to tell you on your question about Speaker Boehner and instructing his rank and file that there will be no spiking of the football if part or all of the Affordable Care Act is struck down.
Yes.
We're correct that they're probably going to do it anyway. It was quite remarkable that John Boehner's press staff chose to release that memo to the press instead of just sending it to whom it was addressed, which was members of the Republican conference. It went to the press, too, which kind of suggests to you that the Speaker's office doesn't necessarily trust all of its members to abide by that order, that there will be no spiking of the football. And also, Republican aides have let me know and let other members of the press know that if this decision does go their way, and that's a big if, they would like as little commentary as possible coming from the Republicans in Congress, even though there will be some, and they want President Obama to own that decision. They want the response to come from the White House. They want the White House to have to react to the ruling, to the unconstitutionality, to the unwinding of the president's signature domestic accomplishment. That's what they want. So as little response as comes from Capitol Hill that can make headlines itself, the better as far as they're concerned. There will be some, of course, but they want to minimize it.
And Brian, let me just add one more thing to that, which is that what you're seeing now also, which is consistent with that analysis, is that the congressional wing of the Republican Party is now subservient in some sense, deferential in some sense to Mitt Romney and the presidential campaign. And it's not clear. The Romney campaign is going to have a response, is going to have to figure out what its politics are depending on what the outcome is. And the congressional wing doesn't want to get ahead of their presidential candidate in terms of him making a response. So they want Obama to have to respond first, and then they want the Romney campaign to be able to respond in a clear way to whatever the president says about the outcome before anybody on Capitol Hill in the Republican wing of the party, in the congressional wing of the party, gets ahead of Mitt Romney. He is now the leader of the party in all but the formal sense. He's now officially really the head of the titular head of the Republican Party and the highest priority the party has, which is electing a Republican president. So they want to also stay out of his way and let this proceed in the proper way, not in any kind of formal sense, but proper way politically to advantage Romney and therefore the rest of the Republican Party to the maximum advantage.
We'll continue in a minute with the Takeaways Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick, who is at the Supreme Court, and New York Magazine national political reporter John Heilman. We are getting word from the court now that they've completed the orders, that is, announcing which cases they will accept and won't accept. For example, the Montana case that's related to Citizens United, as we heard. They are going on now to the opinions. And apparently, it is expected that they are going to release the Arizona opinion momentarily, the immigration law question, probably not health care reform today, but because the Supreme Court works in mysterious ways, this is yet to be determined, and we will know more by the time we come back after a short break in a minute. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with John Heilman, national political reporter for New York Magazine and author of the book and the movie about the 2008 campaign Game Change. Here's the way the Supreme Court works on days like this. They announce the orders, that is, the things that are cases that they're going to accept or not take for next term, in writing. That's the stack of papers that Todd Zwillick was telling us earlier that he had been handed. And then they sit at the bench and read decisions in cases they have already decided. They are reading the Arizona immigration law decision right now. It's turning out to be a partial victory for each side. Reuters has a headline right now that says the U.S. Supreme Court upholds key part of tough Arizona immigration law in defeat for Obama. However, the AP is saying Supreme Court strikes down most of Arizona crackdown on illegal immigrants. On first blush, what this looks like to us is that much of the Arizona law has been invalidated, but that one key provision allowing police officers to check the legal status of anyone arrested for any crime was upheld. So that's a first blush take on what the Supreme Court is doing right now with the Arizona law. And John Heilman, what a jumble of messages for people of all ages who are here illegally. The president's announcement the other week about how many people under 30 brought here illegally by their parents as kids can get two-year work permits if they've been law-abiding and finished high school. Then we had Romney refusing to say if he would reverse that ruling, putting those teens and 20-somethings at risk of deportation after they register with the government under Obama if Romney's elected. Now we have this, part yes, part no. These are interesting and confusing times for many immigrant families, wouldn't you say?
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, trying, it's like one of the 20,000-foot view here is that, you know, we are, the demographic composition of the country is changing in a profound way. And it's been a long time coming, and there are demographers who pointed out for the last two decades that the massive growth of the Hispanic population in America was one of the key transformations that was taking over American society over the course of the next 20 or 30 or 40 years. And we are grappling with that legally, and we're grappling with it politically. And it is it's such a huge transformation, and one that a lot of Americans have are very enthused about it. Some people are very afraid of it. It's provoked very polarized reactions in the political sphere. We have laws that are that at the federal and state levels that do send, as you said, totally contradictory messages to those, especially Hispanic immigrants who are here. And it's one that really, is going to be a dominant fact of our politics and our legislative lives for the foreseeable future, and one that it's going to be, you know, 50 years from now, this will all be seen as a convulsive period in how American law and politics dealt with the immigration issue. It will by then be settled, and we'll look back on this as one of these big, huge transformations that changed American society. But we're in the middle of it right now, and as much heat as this has generated over the past 10 years or so, we're going to see it get much more heated, I think, over the course of the next 10.
And one interesting note coming from the court, in addition to what I said before, since most of this Arizona immigration law has been struck down, that Chief Justice Roberts joined the swing Justice Kennedy and the liberal wing for the Arizona decision. So that's pretty interesting. And that happens to be minus the recused Justice Kagan. She was part of the Obama administration when they went to bat legally to try to strike down the Arizona law, so she had to recuse herself. But Chief Justice Roberts joining Justice Kennedy, plus the liberals on the bench minus Kagan, to strike down most of the Arizona law. Here's a soundbite of Meghan McCain, daughter of Arizona Senator John McCain. She was on this program last week on what she thinks New Yorkers don't get about immigration politics in Arizona.
Listen, I think Arizona's getting a bad rap, though. I think we're really at the front lines when it comes to immigration, and it's really easy for people on the East Coast to sort of pontificate that we're racist and it's so crazy down there, and I think we're just the ones that are having to deal with it.
So that's a little of the Arizona context from an Arizonan who now lives in New York. Of course, New York is also on the front lines of immigration. Most of this city is foreign-born or children of foreign-born. But I saw a poll number flash on my television screen, John, that Romney only leads Obama in Arizona by 46% to 43%. Do you know if that's right? Is staunchly conservative Arizona becoming a swing state in 2012?
Well, you know, there's no question, Brian, that the polling out of Arizona in the course of the last 6 months, the polling that's been between Obama and other Republicans, and now between Obama and Romney, has the race pretty close to even. And the 46-43, that most recent poll, I think, is probably pretty close to how it actually stands in Arizona. There was a lot of talk in the Obama campaign 6 months ago about possibly trying to invest resources in Arizona. Everyone in the Obama campaign and everyone in the Democratic Party, and I think the Republican Party, recognizes that when you think about what the new swing states are, what are going to be swing states contested in presidential elections going forward, Arizona is the first one on that list, and it has everything to do with the growth of the Hispanic population there and the fact that Hispanics have, by and large, been trending Democratic over the course of the past few cycles. Whether it will be a swing state in this election or not is much, much, much more dubious, and it partly goes to the fact that the Obama campaign recognizes that it's going to get outspent in this election. It regards itself, given even with all the money they're raising, they think that they are operating with a resource scarcity. And when they think about what they want to spend that money on, do they want to go and try to take away a state from Republicans that they don't need to win? Or would they rather spend that money defending states that President Obama won in 2008? Everybody from the Obama campaign that I've talked to in the last 6 months, or sorry, the last 6 weeks, has said, you know, if it's that close in Arizona, we'd rather put our money elsewhere and try to maintain the states that we won in 2008 rather than trying to take something away that we don't need to do. But there's no question that in 2016, in 2020, Arizona is going to very much be in play on the presidential level.
A couple of quick things before you go on other topics, John. First of all, is the House of Representatives going to vote on a contempt of Congress resolution against the United States Attorney General Eric Holder this week?
I don't know whether they are or not, but it would not surprise me at all. They see the Republicans in the House see blood in the water here, and if nothing else, even if it's only a symbolic vote, I think they think the politics here favor them. They feel like they're getting mileage out of this issue. They think that the White House is on the defensive. If you think about past precedent in Congress's in the past, not on contempt, obviously that's a novel thing that's being done. But a lot of this is grandstanding, and it doesn't seem to me that there's any reason to think they will not continue to grandstand if they think it's in their political advantage, which they do.
And I have to play you this one clip from Meet the Press yesterday. I don't know if you noticed that it invoked your book title. It's former New Mexico Congressman and Clinton cabinet member Bill Richardson on why Romney will pick a headline grabber for vice president rather than someone safe. Listen.
This election is going to be so close. I think the president wins it very narrowly in those Southwest states. You know, all this do no harm. Who's going to be the best VP ready to be president? You know, I'd love that. That's a civics class statement. But in the end is, how can I win and eke out a narrow victory? And I think the Governor Romney is going to have to find a game changer.
Well, so who's Obama going to pick for vice president then to do that?
That was Republican Congressman Issa getting in a dig at Obama and Biden at the end. But Richardson used your book and movie title, Game Change. Didn't they learn their lesson about the game-changing roll of the dice Veep selection after Sarah Palin?
They did. And though I'm an admirer of Governor Richardson, I'm afraid he spends less time talking to people in the Romney campaign than the reporters who are covering that campaign. I think what they have learned is that their theory for how to win this election is they don't believe, and they might be right or wrong about this, but they don't believe that they need a game-changing pick. What they believe is that they make this election about Barack Obama, about Barack Obama's stewardship of the economy, and they can keep the focus on him from now until Election Day. They win that race as a referendum on Obama's leadership. And nothing that creates headlines, creates controversy, creates questions about the readiness of the vice presidential pick on Romney's side, nothing that diverts attention from Obama is a winner for them. I think they correctly believe that the bottom of the ticket does not win you anything in American politics. The bottom, nobody votes for the bottom of the ticket, and Governor Richardson's right that it's going to be a close election. But I think the Romney campaign's analysis is that it's not so much a do no harm pick, but that their notion is that if you a governing pick. And one that does not generate controversy or headlines or distract from Barack Obama is a winning political pick for them, and that's why they're going to go in that direction.
All right. Now, summing up, folks, what we know now in the last half hour, no health care decision from the Supreme Court today. They rejected Montana's efforts to curb campaign spending, effectively upholding Citizens United. They said in so many words that, yes, sorry, Montana, Citizens United does apply to you. And the biggest news, they struck down much of the controversial Arizona immigration law, which is a victory for the Obama administration, which went to court to sue for this. But they left the door open as to whether the police ID check on anybody who's arrested to check for their documents is legal. That particular provision is still to be litigated. It looks like the Supreme Court said for some reason that they couldn't rule on that. Coming up later in the program, we will have a guest from the National Immigration Law Center to look at that Arizona ruling in more detail, so stay tuned for that. And we thank John Heilman, national political correspondent for New York Magazine and the author of Game Change, for starting us off today. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.